Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Mike Barnett, and I am with Brent Berglund from Walla Walla University School of Theology and Bob Resch, a retired physician. Gentlemen, what practical lessons do you think that we can learn from Jesus' model prayer?
His prayer that we think of as the Lord's Prayer, right? The one you're talking about.
That's the one.
Matthew, Jesus' disciples, in the Sermon on the Mount, his disciples have asked him how they should pray. And they said, teach us. And I think last week, Pastor Mike, you mentioned the passage, similar here, where Jesus says the pagans babble on and on in their prayers. Jesus' prayer is short. It is sweet. It is to the point. It deals with their attitude, their hopes, their dreams, their perspective, their relationship with other people, their basic needs, and their relationship with God, right? That he's God and their creature. And we can go into more depth, but I think the first lesson is that his prayer is not long. Prayer does not have to be an hour to be prayer. And I think that's important.
And how about if you're praying as a learner, you're trying to learn how to pray, maybe even learn how to pray better or more or whatever. When you think about Jesus's prayer, it's relatively simple. Mm-hmm. It's not just short. It's simple. Now, that doesn't mean it lacks depth.
Mm-hmm.
By no way would I want to say that or imply that, right? For example, Our Father is a way in which it begins, and that's, we're talking Matthew chapter 6, verses 9 through 13. Our Father, I believe those few words capture the essence of the gospel. When you go through books like Galatians and Romans, what you're talking about is becoming children of God. This is the end result of a relationship that a person has with God, that you rejoin God's family, right? And so, in essence, right at the beginning, Jesus tackles the issue of us as sinners rejoining God's family, our Father.
But it's also corporate, and that's valuable. That means Jesus' prayer, our Father, he's putting himself on a level playing field with us and says, he is my Father as well as he is yours. That's elevating for us and in some ways condescending for him, right? Philippians 2, Jesus took human form, but that elevates us and says, no, we need to see God as Father, not as some harsh judge deity off in the distance ready to strike you. He's a dad. That changes the way we think about coming to him, I think.
Okay.
I was intrigued that although all of us have memorized the Lord's Prayer in different settings, it's not the same in Luke as it is in Matthew.
Not quite.
Furthermore, it's still a different way in our lesson. Our lesson chose not to quote either Luke or Matthew, but rather the English Book of Common Prayer, which is all right, I guess, but unusual in our lessons. And then we should probably, before we're done, point out that the last sentence of the Lord's Prayer is a quotation not from either Matthew or Luke, but from 1 Chronicles 29, which is all right, too. That was a great prayer.
Yes, absolutely. So Jesus starts out, our Father, right, in heaven. As you and I pray, we actually enter a different realm, according to Jesus' prayer. We enter heaven itself. Now, thanks to Jesus, we can do that, but that is a remarkable thought in and of itself. Many times when I'm praying, I'm thinking still about my earthly problems, my earthly situation, the things that are weighing me down. But if I would just step back and say, I have entered heaven. I'm in a different realm. I'm in a different situation. Now I'm in a place where not only can my wants and needs be taken care of, I also learn that there's more out there that needs to be addressed than just my human needs and wants. There is a universe that also needs to be thought of and dealt with that God is attempting also to bring the best things to. And then there are resources beyond what my planet can offer me.
Yeah, God has a lot more people that he is working with than just me. But he would like me to have that heavenly perspective. I like what Paul says, set your mind on things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of the Father, right? Set your mind. And that's what prayer does, doesn't it? It sets my mind in heavenly places rather on the earthly issues. And now I get, I think, John in Revelation, I get a heavenly perspective of earthly realities, and I see things very differently when I talk to him in prayer.
I'm also intrigued by Daniel's prayer, Daniel 9, mm-hmm. which is mentioned in our lesson.
Yep.
And Daniel had a problem because he knew he'd been in Babylon about 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that Jeremiah said 70 years and things are going to change. But now I have a question. I have been to a lot of evangelistic meetings, and I learned in those that in biblical prophecy, a day represents a year. So when Daniel said it's been 70 years, how much mathematics did he do in his head to decide whether the time was up or if he might have had 25,000 more years to go before that time was up?
Well, he tackled that problem, and he was pretty certain that the 70-year that he read about earlier in Scripture was the time period that was applicable to him. And certainly, I think one of the things about his prayer that about his prayers in general that strikes me is he seems to have had a very warm relationship with God. I mean, they are constantly saying, "You are dearly beloved to Him." You know,
highly esteemed.
Yes, you know, they come to Him, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, when was the last time anybody, you know, even said something good, you know, about me, let alone something that good about me?
Yeah. Well, and if I could say one more thing about Daniel, the time prophecies in Daniel and Revelation aren't given in the normal way of speech, whereas Jeremiah, he just says 70 years. But in Daniel, time prophecies are odd, right? A time, times, and half, and the dividing of times, right? And 2300 evening, morning. And it's different sort of time than we expect. So there's something shifts in apocalyptic where the time that we are used to shifts. I love how Daniel's prayer ends at the end of Daniel 2, because while he is still praying, help is on the way, right? The angel Gabriel comes and says, while you were still in prayer, I was caused to come to you. And I think that's the way it is in the Lord's Prayer too. When we bring our needs to God and I say, Father, I'm in need of food, you know, give me today my daily bread. If I am in need, before I am even done with my prayer, an answer's already on the way, right, for those needs. I think that's something that Daniel encourages me about.
That sounds like a Toby Mac song. Help is on the way.
It's on
yes.
the way.
You know, one of the things that's different, you know, when we're talking about our Father in heaven, is His thoughts are not the same as our own earthly Father's thoughts, right? And He says that in Isaiah 55, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, right? So that's another reason why it is super valuable for us to pray. Because sometimes when we talk to our earthly family, our earthly Father, we're not going to get the same positivity. We're not going to get the same care that we need out of God. And then, of course, as we move on in the Lord's Prayer, one of the things that we learn, it's got an interesting split. It's got structure to it. The first mm-hmm. half is all about you. It's about God. It's mm-hmm. God-centered stuff, right? And then the second half of it is us-centered. What do we need? And notice I said we need. It's not about what I personally need. Give us this day our daily bread is not the same as give me
my daily bread.
Yeah, my daily bread. It's not the same
thing. It's a very corporate prayer, but that's much like Daniel, right? Daniel's prayer in Daniel 9 was, we have sinned, right? We've fallen short, and forgive us. And I think Jesus wants us to see ourselves in community in prayer as well.
And as somebody who can also help disperse the resources that God gives to us, right? That's part of what our opportunities are. So by revealing, though, His name to us, you know, hallowed be your name, hallowed be your name. By revealing God's name to us, seems like He's taken a lot of risk of His name being abused and misused. I mean, think down through the years of all the different ways in which God's name has been misused.
And He has lots of names, too. I mean, we refer to certain names that we prefer or that we think God prefers. But there was a Bible teacher at Pacific Union College years ago who wanted to make a day-by-day devotional on the names of God. And he had great difficulty eventually because there are not 365 names of God, only about 350-some.
Yeah, there are quite a few names for God. So in the name of God, though, you know, wars have been fought, acts of terrors have been committed. In the name of God, people have been enslaved and held in bondage. They've been oppressed and robbed of their free will. They've been rejected and condemned and expelled from their homes and from their communities. People have misused the name of God for personal profit. Right? And to gain attention.
That's a violation of the commandment that says, do not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. His character, right? His name.
And then, of course, another risk that God took, you know, in revealing His name to us is that people might simply ignore it. neglect it.
Yeah.
Never use it. Never call on him. That would be difficult.
Well, we have an interesting challenge with the name of God in that the Jews for so long never even said his name. They replaced it with something else. We don't even know what that Hebrew divine name really is, right? We're guessing. We don't have the vowels for it. But I love how the first three lines of the Lord's Prayer are also all what we would call in English imperatives, commands, even though they don't come across that way. But let your name be holy. Let it be. Let it become holy. It's a prayer entering into the desire for the specialness of God. Let your kingdom come. You know, it's third person imperative. We don't speak in third person imperatives. Let your will be done, right? Let happen your will. And it's a very permissive and yet encouraging, almost not quite commanding, but maybe entreating God to make his name holy in the earth. Let that happen, right? Let your will be done. And I don't know that our English always comes across quite that strong. These are imperatives.
They're imperatives, not jessives, because let is jessive.
But because they're third person, that's how we do it in English, right? Okay. Let it happen. Because it's a third person. It's not commanding God. It's commanding the name to be holy. And that's weird.
Okay, so, you know, time is running by, so let's talk about the value of having a prayer list or keeping records of God's answers to our prayers. What do you do, prayer-wise?
I have a binder next to my bed that I have requests that people have asked me to pray for, and then when things do happen, I'll put a smiley face or a check mark beside it when something good and a note about what has happened. And then there are other places in there where I will have requests that I've made known to God that he has done something amazing. They function as ongoing testimonies for what he's done in my life and in others too.
And not to mess up your illustrations, but what do you do about those which have not been remarkably answered?
Or even mundanely so.
Yes.
Because sometimes answers come in mundane ways.
Yeah, I keep a list on my desk where I do all of my studying, a prayer list, and I get most of the names that are on that list from my Sabbath school class. Now, I'm in flux. I recently retired as a pastor, which means I don't have a church home currently. I can attend wherever, but, you know, I'm still trying to sort out what to do with my life there. Well, we're running out of time. So once again, just want to thank you. Those of you who have a prayer life, I want to encourage you to keep praying. Thank you, Amber Amos, for your work as sound engineer today, and gentlemen, for our conversation.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.